Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we are tickling your earbuds in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, the summer rumbles on and amongst the background noise of a tournament nobody cares about, a tournament we have a mild interest in, and amongst the new signings, transfer rumours and speculations, there's the counter rumours and speculation. And then the fixtures came out. But what do we really know? Well, we do know that we've added a young Greek hotshot over the name of Charalampos Kostoulas and an Italian starlet in the name of Diego Coppola to the squad alongside Olivier Boscagli, who we tried to sign last year, and Tommy Watson, who we also knew about already. However, this, of course, has led to the countless fake news about who might be leaving. We also know that we will kick off the season at home to Fulham and we will be the first side to visit Everton's new ground at Bramley Moor Dock in a league game. But we don't want to talk about that because we want to talk about films. And who better to do that with than an Albion fan who's written some of the best British films to grace our screens in recent years. Films such as The Bromley Boys, Seaside Town, 6 Years Gone and most recently Fright have poured from this man's quill. Please welcome back writer, author and director Mr. Warren Dudley. Hello.
Hello. What an introduction.
I was going to say, you weren't expecting that, were you?
I really wasn't, actually. No. Definitely, that's my eulogy sorted.
Yeah, I'd have just gone, this is the Albion Roar, here's Warren Dudley. All right, mate.
Which would have been fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Warren, it's been a while since you've been on. You've had various other films that have come out since we last spoke to you. But what we really want to talk about, because most people won't remember what 15, 16 years ago, whenever it was. Why don't you tell us about yourself again and your Albion supporting history?
Well, I am a screenwriter and filmmaker, and I've made a few movies over the last few years. The one that Albion fans may have seen is The Bromley Boys, which is a film about Bromley FC, which I was the screenwriter on. So that was in 2018. I've written a few and made a few independent lower budget things, one called Fright, 6 Years Gone, Cage. Basically, I'm always up to something movie wise. Yep. Albion wise, life sentence. Started at when would it have been? Well, look, my first memory of the Albion is we went, my dad, bless him, went to every round of the cup run in 83.
Okay.
And we'd booked a family holiday to go to Spain in May. And so he knew it was coming, this holiday. And we kept winning, we kept winning, we kept winning. And he missed the final and because we were in Spain. And so we all came back for the Thursday night. And I was sitting in tears at halftime in my bedroom, age 9, 3-0 down, I think we were. Mm. And that was it. I look at that moment and think, that was it. That was the moment I thought, I've got a life of this.
The way you tell that story that we kept winning, yeah, we kept winning and the holiday and what have you, it, yeah, makes it sound like in later life there's possibly that your father ended up on the board at Crystal Palace. Otherwise, completely unprepared.
Absolutely, yeah. Of course we were going to get to the cup final in January.
Of course you are.
Yeah,
yeah, we don't need to worry about anyone. We don't need to worry about anything else. You know, luckily, we're going to get knocked out soon.
Luckily, my dad didn't own 3 football clubs, so it worked out okay.
Well, of course, there is a link to the FA Cup final and Albion film-related filmmakers because Louis Mars was born that day. So
there is that as well.
That's incredible.
And we had, actually, and I know you weren't part of it, we also had a filmmaker on last week as well, AD. I mean, they're just coming out of our ears.
Yeah, because someone's going to make the Albion Roar film.
Well, and, can I just...
Who's going to play you, Al?
I'll play myself, it's fine.
Well, just looking at us, Al, I could do it.
Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, I was hoping for, I don't know, Eddie Marsan or...
fair enough. You
know, Craig Parkinson. I was just checking Harry Hill's availability, but...
No, it just occurs to me, like I said, I just want to sort of bounce back to last week's show for those that did miss it. We had Steve Rees-Lewis and Matt Goulson on, and they've done a series of 8 in-depth interviews with public figures, but they wanted to do it in the style of a film, of a documentary. So if you haven't had a chance to do that, then do pop back to our podcast library. And download that. And if you get a chance to, then have a listen to Heroes Have Heroes. I've watched most of them, and they are fascinating, even if there's a little bit of an Arsenal bent there. But no, so yeah, back to the filmmaker we have on this week, AD.
Indeed, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you mentioned yourself. Most people will be familiar with the film, the Bromley Boys, which, quite frankly, it's one of those films, if ever I see it, or if it's, I see it's on, I'll watch it, because it's just one of them. There's a few of them, you know. Yesterday, it's another one. Or you see a Bond film that's on, you know you're going to end up watching it. I would
Paddington
put the Bromley.
Two. I'll say Paddington 2. There you go.
And 1 and 3. In fact, actually, with Paddington.
Well, yeah, they're both very good. But so tell us about, in that case, because the Bromley Boys is the one actually that's your highest, the highest mountain you're standing up on. Tell us about its genesis and how it came from whatever the original idea was to it being released in the cinema.
Well, a producer friend of mine who was actually an actor in a TV pilot we made called Come On You Chickens, which was a football mock doc 20 odd years ago. TJ was in that as an actor, became a producer, came across this book called The Bromley Boys by Dave Roberts and loved it. And because of my writing on Come On You Chickens, he's a Palace fan, lives up in London.
Wow.
And crazy, I'm surrounded by him, honestly. And he said, meet me in a pub in Brighton. So we went down to a boozer in Brighton. He gave me the book, and I kind of started just picking out paragraphs and bits. Met Dave, who is very sadly no longer with us, but he... Yeah, he died a couple of years ago now, bless him. But and then, yeah, we put a script together. That was in 2012. And then it took 5 years to get it, the money raised, and get it produced and ready to go. So it's a long old haul. But look, I loved it. I'm so proud of it. I think it's... Look, it's not for me to say that it's good, but it's gone down pretty well with...
I'm telling you now, players. It's good. I mean, I watched it again like a couple of nights ago.
Oh, sorry, that's really kind. And it's like, football films are hard to get right. There's lots of bad ones.
Yes.
And I was just a stickler for detail, really. That's when I watch football films, and they just get football wrong.
Yes.
And as soon as they get football wrong in football films, I just lost it. I watched there was one of the hooligan films from the 90s, and I started watching it. And
Green it Street at, or something.
No, it was based at Tranmere.
Really?
I can't remember.
Oh, God.
But anyway, they'd done this cutaway where there were some lads in the corner in the crowd, and a player sort of like sidled into view down by the corner flag. He didn't have a number on his back. And it's little things like that. I just think, come on, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, someone must have spotted that. I was on set of the Bromley Boys being a right git.
Yeah, but the thing is, the best football films aren't necessarily, the best bits aren't about football.
No, that's true.
Really, it's about the stuff that goes on around it. So, I mean, you look at one of the greatest football films of all time, Escape to Victory. It's actually, okay, obviously there are moments, and obviously you've got the likes of Pele and stuff in it as well. But, you know, it's the story of the concentration camp and how they're trying to get out, and how Pele learned how to play football by keeping up with oranges in the streets.
Yeah, and also get
Rio.
To realise just how crap Sylvester Stallone was at football.
Yeah, he was in goal, wasn't he?
He was in goal, yeah.
Yeah.
All I would say about that particular thing is their kits, which end up being sold by Toffs, are absolutely great. Mm. I'm not absolutely convinced that they are in the style of 1940s kits, but so we're talking about, I mean, actually very mod. The Allies were playing in white with red and blue stripes. The goalkeeper had a blue shirt on with sort of inverted stripes. They looked absolutely great. I mean, it was hilarious when you got Michael Caine trying to tell Bobby Moore how to play football. Or, you know, Ozzy Ardiles, you know, playing alongside Pele. An Argentinian and a Brazilian. Yeah, that's going to go well. But, you know... yeah, that's the nature of football films, isn't it? You have to suspend your willing a bit, don't you? Because
you do, yeah.
By and large, especially for sort of, I am going to include you in this, Warren, nerds like us,
Yeah, of course, yeah.
it matters. So with that in mind, okay, I'm sure you guys have been thinking about it. Good films involving football, bad films involving football, and I want you to give your ideas as to whether you think that the football element of it was right. So go.
Mean Machine's got Perry Digweed in it.
Is it really? Well, there you
Yes, it
go.
does.
Fantastic.
The one thing I would say about the Mean Machine is that it was Vinnie Jones that was doing all the sort of the direction. He wasn't the director, but he did say that everyone who was going to play in that football team had to be a decent footballer in the first place. He didn't want just any old actors who just swing their leg and hope for the
Yeah.
best.
Well, let me tell you a quick story about the Bromley Boys then. We had our team of actors who were our sort of the Bromley side. And then we've got like a ramshackle bunch of extras to play the opposition every week, right, in
Right.
the various games. Often the same lads, so you don't look too carefully. But there's the funny thing is when you in the final game when they play Enfield, we didn't have enough extras. We wanted it to look like it was really busy, so we didn't have enough extras. So the cutaways of the crowd are both teams. Now I'm giving away all the
No,
with
this is good. This is good.
flat caps, scarves wrapped around there. So basically, if you every time it cuts back to the full stand at Crockenhill where we shot it, it's largely the 22 players on the
That's all
pitch.
right. Saves a few quid on the budget, doesn't it?
It does, and yeah. So that's funny. I quite enjoyed going back to your question. I quite enjoyed the
Yeah.
Mike Bassett movie. That had some moments that I quite enjoyed. Some good
Right.
fun there, and the football in that was too bad. They did that kind of superimposing it. I'm sure if I look back, I haven't seen it for probably 15 years, but at the time I was quite impressed with how they did it. But that wasn't too bad. Quite enjoyed that.
I think I had to go through a list because I was trying to think of what best films about football. I couldn't remember any. I
Hang
can
on, are you
remember
talking about
Escape. I
films
can,
about football or films that actually feature
well, that
football?
involve it. So I mean, I've had a quick look through, and obviously the standout ones are obviously Escape to Victory, Bromley Boys, Fever Pitch,
Yes, yep.
Yeah. But
But that's not, oh, that's got the that's there's not really any football
Nick
of
Hornby.
watching Arsenal, is there?
Well, no, but
Yeah.
basically, if you suspend the reality of it being Arsenal, it's just basically a
Yeah.
wonderful story.
I was
Yes.
quite inspired by that. I read the book at the time, and
Yeah.
obviously we've got Alan Davis doing the narration on the Bromley Boys, and
Sure.
that the narration I was kind of inspired by some of
Yeah.
that lovely narration of Fever Pitch.
Because the stage version of that was done by a couple of Brighton people, wasn't it? Paul Hodgson and Steve North.
Yes.
Oh, was it really? That's
Yes, it
interesting.
was.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously we've got Damn United, where Brighton is
Yeah.
Eastbourne and Scarborough.
Yes. A good
which
movie though.
is
A
which
good, I'll give
again
it.
but again it's a great film about the characters rather than the actual
Yeah.
the story itself. Gregory's Girl
I
is
was going to mention that.
Yep.
I was going to mention the football in that is dreadful.
It is, yep.
It
There's
is
football in
absolutely,
it.
and it's not because Dee Hepburn was the star striker. But one thing, and I'm sure that you've spotted this, Warren, one thing they do is to make sure they've got the shot, is that basically the striker is running through, and they get to within about 4 yards of the goal. The goalkeeper is, I can't, obviously you're on the radio, you can't see this. The goalkeeper is standing there. You know full well they should have actually come out and either got the ball or taken the striker out, but instead they're standing there like a lemon. Before the striker kicks in, you think you were 2 yards out.
Yeah, but it's
That's
what I would say is it's really it's what we got what we did with the Bromley Boys is we made sure that our actors and extras could play a bit, and we just got them to play. So we sort of got them to kick off, and then we got a couple of cameras around the place just getting shots of them playing. So then you get a kind of feel for some real football, pretty low quality, but that's funny because it was low quality, so that's fine. But it is hard if you've got in the script I've written it says Alan Stonebridge trips his way past two defenders and then gets fouled on the edge of the box. That's hard to put together looking realistic because it needs to be there. But we had quite a few goes at that, and you'll see it, and it looks okay in the film. It's not too bad, but it's
Yeah.
really hard to set a set piece where you need a specific thing to happen
See, you need
in a
that's what you
movie.
needed Diana Ross in the movie.
Yes,
Who else have you got in mind, AD?
well,
Other
film
film?
wise
Yeah.
Right, so Early Man, which is the that's a football film made by
Yeah, not seen that one. It's a Wallace and Gromit thing, isn't it? Wallace and Gromit.
it's an
It's
Aardman one.
Aardman, sorry, yeah.
Bend It Like Beckham obviously is a great story. There's a film I've never seen it, but it looked interesting. There's only one Jimmy Grimble, which
I
is
have heard of it.
I've seen that, and it's got Ray Winstone, who
Yes.
has his voice overdubbed to make him sound Mancunian.
No, he doesn't. That's fine.
Yeah,
I'm
and
convinced it's not his
Marvelous
voice.
is the
And
other
also,
one. And
oh, that,
Marvelous.
which is lovely. A lovely, lovely film. I think that's a really beautiful movie.
Yeah, but I mean,
Can I
obviously,
also.
you've got there's various documentaries and stuff that have been there. Like, obviously, I mentioned Louis Mars earlier. Obviously, his film Kaiser, which is fantastic. But I mean, I think we're talking fictional.
I recently watched the one. Next goal wins, last goal wins. The
Oh
one about
yeah.
the worst international team in history. But again, I was being a nerd, and there was shots from the real game, and then it would cut away, so cut in to a shot of the goal going in, completely different goal nets. And I'm just thinking, come on, guys, come on, just a little bit of thought here, and then I'm
Well, there's
out.
two that actually spring to mind that you have missed out, AD.
Yep.
There's the amazing football scene from Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
With the crocodiles.
Yep. And I know you've not neither of you have watched it, and I know I go on about it all the time, but it is brilliant. You can't actually do this without mentioning Ted Lasso. There's a lot of football stuff now.
Yeah,
They
if
do
you're
it on
going to
an
mention
empty.
that, you've got to bring up Murphy's Mob as well.
Oh, crikey, yes, you do. Oh, that's
Jossie's Giants, remember
Jossie's and Jossie's
Giants?
Giants. Yeah, that was Brian Robson's acting debut, wasn't it? And I think his last.
I absolutely adored Murphy's Mob back in
Why
the
is
day.
that?
You can't remember Murphy's Mob? So
I can't, no.
it
I vaguely
was.
remember it, but I just don't think I watched it.
So basically, it was about a kid supporters club, which was it was all filmed at Watford, and the Scottish man Mac Murphy, and all the scrapes they got into and stuff, and breaking into the stadium and things. It ran for a few good few years. It was and they put it out into a few series of books as well. It's all on YouTube, of course, like most things are these days. But
So when it
yeah, it was. For those old enough to remember it, and I'm sure there's
it's about
most
40
of
years
our
old easily. It's
listeners
easily
probably
40 years old, yeah.
yeah, it's a, yeah, it was a wonderful kids TV series from the 80s, I
Yeah,
guess.
like, so with all these things that we've mentioned, Warren, in mind, and sort of like some great football stuff and some terrible, I still feel that actually, when it comes to football on screen, whether it's TV or film, I still think that it's still in the negative, the way it's portrayed. Certainly, the on-pitch stuff. But when it comes to that, and all these, this background of what you've had to work with, and the precedents that have gone before, how do you manage to sort of steer away from what would probably be quite an easy way of, using just about every football cliche?
Well, I mean, look, I'm sure some people would argue there's plenty of those in the Bromley Boys. So, but I kind of wanted that in a way. I kind of wanted it because obviously Dave, the character's 15-year-old Dave, he was very much 15-year-old me. And, it just lives by, he says at one point, I decided he gets chucked out, he gets expelled from school. And he says that I decided to tell the lads at football that I'd left by mutual consent. And that's just such a football nerd joke that I
Yes,
wrote
it
there.
is.
And, so look, I mean, like I said, I'm not averse to a football cliche in given the Bromley Boys
Absolutely.
subject matter of the sort of 1970s, and it is sort of heavy on that. I tried to keep it as fresh as possible, but of course, and the interesting thing with football jokes is that it's really hard to get a whole cinema audience to laugh at a football joke, and I noticed that at various screenings we did where there was something that I thought was really funny. There was the camera pans into the goalkeeper at one point, and it says, "Our goalkeeper, 146 appearances, 2 clean sheets." Right, just a little football joke. Dead silence, and I sort of thought, "Now, oh, come on, that's sort of, it's not a brilliant joke, but it kind of sums the character up nicely." But yeah, so that's
Actually,
an interesting experience.
that reminds me, because it's another thing that actually the Bromley Boys actually reminds me of, is that brilliant episode of Michael Palin's thing. I
Oh,
can't remember,
ripping yarns.
Ripping Yarns, yeah, Golden Gordon, with Barnstonworth.
It
Like,
won. It bloody won.
and she hands him the that there's a hands him the radio to smash and stuff. It's just, you know, that there are elements of that I can
Oh,
see.
but there are.
There are.
You've listed a lot of my references with that Fever Pitch, Gregory's Girl. There's a lot of there that I picked out.
But bizarrely, Warren, not all of your films are football related.
What?
I know.
No, oh, that's crazy.
There is a link in quite a few of them I've seen. But your latest film is a horror film, basically. And when actually when I was chatting to you the other day, and you said you were trying to get some people I'd like to chat to in the States about publicizing the new film Fright, and I said, well, come and talk to us because we cover like horror quite a lot.
That's a good gag. You should put that one in next time, Warren.
Okay, I'm just scribbling it
Don't
down.
credit him.
No, I won't. Don't
Yeah.
worry.
And but you've been working with a lot of stuff, like Eduardo Sanchez, for instance, who was the director for Blair Witch Project and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
So kind of a get with you.
working with him today, shared two or three emails. So that, it's working with him, it's pushing it slightly, but he was a nice bloke.
It's on your CV, mate. It's there.
Of course it is.
I found it on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's sort of true. Don't worry about that. Like most things
Yeah.
on the
Well,
internet.
if you found it on
So
the internet, then it must be true. Hang on, we'll get on to transfers later.
yeah. So why horror? What's drawn you into that? Is it something you've been a big fan of?
I do enjoy it, and I think the thing with horror is that it's a. I mean, the Bromley Boys was like £1 million budget, so a decent sized budget. But the budgets I work with are often 20 grand, 25 grand. So we're talking a different world. My indie stuff, and Fright, I basically this isn't gonna I don't come out well at this. I had this idea that what would it be like if an agoraphobic person suffered a bereavement and couldn't go out after the bereavement of a family member? Well, that's a horrible idea, but it kind of went in and sort of rattled around my brain for a bit, but it doesn't work because the person would just phone someone. And then I was watching a film called The Innocents, which is an old black and white British horror movie from the 50s, and I suddenly thought, oh, I could set it in like the 1930s, and no one would have a mobile phone, and this girl would be stuck with the decaying corpse of her mother. So we wrote a script, went and found an old manor house in Henfield, and shot Fright. And so it's a black and white homage to sort of 1950s British horror cinema, sort of clipped British accents and atmospheric ghostly stuff going on. So yeah, completely away from what I've done before. I sort of like to do that, really, just take on something that's sort of completely new.
Absolutely.
The one previous to that was a sort of gritty missing child sort of handheld documentary feel movie, which was quite
Oh,
sad.
was this 6 years gone?
6 years gone. yeah
Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
yeah yeah again, I had a young daughter at the time, and so I've lost her now. But she's not as young. She's not as young now. No, she's not as young now. But yeah, and I was just constantly worried about her, just like as you are as a dad. And so I thought, how can I best get this out of my system? So I wrote a movie, and so that was that one. And yeah, so I kind of just tried to, do something different every time, really, because it's easy just to get stuck doing the same thing.
Because I mean, there's been a couple of links. I mean, Pranks that you did was had some like horror elements to it. I think Baby Blue was kind of loosely the
Yeah,
book you
that's
read.
yes. Yeah, that was basically because I couldn't make movies during lockdown. I thought I'd write books instead. So actually, back on subject of football, I wrote. Which I don't know whether I'd review. Look, about four people have read it, so the chances that I'll review have is very slim. I wrote a book called Sir Unwin Pugh from Hull to Camp Nou, and it is the reminiscences of a 94-year-old ex-football player, and it's kind of his autobiography. And
Is this fictional?
oh yeah, completely fiction.
This sounds
Nonsense.
fantastic. This is
It's
right up
absolute
my
nonsense.
strata.
So I'll send you a link over, and you could be number five.
Yeah,
Well,
because it does actually say I saw that and I thought, hasn't Spencer Vignes just written this?
no, okay, no, this is my it's very silly. And I
Imagine.
really, really like it. I kind of, because it's a weird thing with comedy. When you've, the more years that separate you and the writing a bit, you
Yeah.
forget you wrote it. So you kind of come to it fresh again. And so I picked it up a few months ago. I just read a page and thought, oh, I was giggling away to myself at my own jokes. Pathetic.
Earlier this week, I listened to the podcast with Mark Pugach and Paul Hayward, and they were talking specifically about, well, the top question was, will England ever host a World Cup again? And if you remember, AD, when we had Paul Hayward in the theatre, he was basically saying FIFA exists for one purpose only, or two: one, to organise the World Cup, and two, to make silly amounts of money. And he was talking about the sort of social political history of FIFA and and the FA's relationship with it. Now, what your story is, you're saying it's fictional there, Warren, but it kind of flicked a couple of switches there, that if you're talking about a 94-year-old fella who, is reminiscing about his football career, then we're talking about someone who played in Spain under Franco in the 1930s or 40s, kind of thing. So, and it's, and again, this is, we're back to Jonathan Wilson here, actually, AD, the, inverting the pyramid and the history of tactics and how many people there were who were English, who went to study and coach in Austria, Switzerland, Hungary, Italy, with new tactics, where the English were just ambivalent and belligerent towards new ideas. So I'm just thinking, is that what you had in mind with this story, or am I just taking this a bit too far in terms of football
No,
terms,
well,
Warren?
I would suggest reading the first half of page one will lead you. It's the ramblings of an old fool, basically, this whole book. And he's kind of, it's all, it's, he's forgotten everything. He's got
So,
very
in other
vague.
words, the last 30 seconds.
Well, exactly, yes. It's got that similarity. No, it's not as deep as that. It is just this guy's career from being a sort of like a budding young player, age 7 or 8, right through to his 90s, when he's had this incredible career. And he was in the 66 squad, but booted out. But I'll definitely, if you get a chance to read, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, because
Please do, do.
it's
Oh,
literally
yeah,
it's still
definitely
it's
love
sort
to
of
read it.
written
Sounds
it's sort
great.
of written for people like us, really.
Right.
So give it a go.
Okay. Well, in that
Well,
case, can I commission you without actually any budget whatsoever, in that case, to write a radio play that we can put on the Raw?
yeah, I'm up for that.
yeah,
I mean,
as long as it's
we'd
about
kind of.
30 seconds long, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Okay.
No, it would be like a ham radio and Frasier, but it'd be yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that episode, but yeah, it would be. I
No.
know Andy Bass certainly is his favourite episode.
Right,
So,
fair
okay.
enough, but
Okay,
yeah.
well, Al, you mentioned the word FIFA there, and we currently have this bloated tournament that is the FIFA Club World Cup going on, which nobody particularly cares about, Warren.
No, I watched. Well, I watched the other night. I watched. That's because it's desperation for any sort of football. It's pathetic.
Yeah.
I watched Benfica and Boca Juniors. That was all right. That was
See,
a bit.
that's a game I'd love to watch, actually. I didn't watch it,
Well,
but
that's the thing. Me and my mate who I go to the Albion with, we were sort of talking about this and saying that if you were starting football again, you would definitely have a World Club Championship.
exactly. This is the point we were talking
Yeah,
about
if you were
off
starting
air
football
before
from
we
scratch,
started.
you would do that because it makes
Yeah.
complete sense. And seeing Benfica versus Boca Juniors is genuinely interesting because they never play each other. But
Yeah.
much like, I guess it's like any tournament, isn't it?
You've
Is that
that was.
it's,
That was exactly my point. You just stolen my thunder
Sorry.
completely.
Go on, Warren. Keep going.
But
Steal his
yeah, but
thunder
you
and
know, I
stick it in
really,
your
but
pocket.
just to riff
What
on that,
else?
yeah. So basically, the idea is how basically if football was started from scratch now, and you're inventing all the tournaments that you would have, of course you would have you'd have the World Cup for the countries, you'd have a European competition for the clubs, you'd have a South American one. And Oceania, of course, you'd have all of those competitions, and of course you'd have a Club World Cup, because, but you would do it in such a way that it wouldn't be detrimental to the players.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the whole point. And when you've had, so for instance, across Europe, I mean, let's say England, but certainly I think it's the same story would apply across Europe, is they've played 38, 40, 45, whatever it is, games. And if you're one of the top European sides, you're playing sort of north of 50 games a season. and they are so much more high. I mean, Once Upon a Time, you know, I think it's Steve Gatting, I think it is, holds Steve Gatting and Dean Wilkins hold the record for the most number of Albion games in one season. It's 56.
Right.
Because that's how far we got in the competitions. But that was a different time. These days, you know, 56 equals total burnout. You need the time off. But then that's where the money comes in. So any aspect of it, if you're saying, but without it being detrimental to the players, that's when you say that actually those players who've just played their season, they've got to have a rest. And if you're going to have a representative of a club, then basically there's little more you can do than actually stick out the kids. And even then, there's an under-21s tournament going on. There's an under-19s tournament going on. It just actually has shown, and I take your point about if football started again, would you prioritise a national World Cup, you know, Nations World Cup or a City World Cup? It's a fascinating sort of thing to consider.
Yeah.
But obviously we are where we are, and we're, you know, the nations thing is 100 years down the line compared to the club thing.
I think it's if you had, this, I don't just never do this anymore because I don't like knockout tournaments today, but if you had the champions of England, France, Germany, Spain, Argentina, Brazil, at the big eight football nations, whoever they may be, and play the knockout tournament over 2 weeks.
Yes.
That's a great idea. All the games would be busy, filled, and it would be really interesting to see Bayern Munich play Palmeiras. But, you know,
if you're a footballer, you know, your dream is score the winning goal in the FA Cup final, play in the World Cup. And, you know, you the idea of like playing against a competitive fixture against Boca Juniors or River Plate or Flamenco or Corinthians.
That
would be, it's just that's the dream.
Yeah.
But not that Infantino's bloated. Anyone can play. Oh, we're gonna any which way to get Messi involved.
What's the entry criteria for this tournament? Do you know?
10p and a pound of grapes, I think. But
it's very odd, isn't it, that Chelsea have rocked up there? It's just an odd.
I think it's odd... winners of the last few Champions Leagues or something.
Or some coefficient algorithm.
I'll get the impression.
But then Bayern, how are Bayern there? Because they haven't won a Champions League for a very long time. But you know, this. I mean, the South American sides, they take this stuff very seriously, and they're well into it. And that's great, but. It's just the organisation, the fact that Infantino's even made a shiny of himself in the Panini album is just preposterous.
And the players coming out one by one and all these kind of weird things that they're doing. I just think the whole thing has been designed.
Okay. Let's talk about a tournament that we do have an interest in, and that is obviously the Under-21 Championship.
Yeah.
Jack Hinchwood obviously got on the pitch against Slovenia. They nearly scored the winner.
Almost won it, didn't they? Yeah.
But I mean, that's something obviously we can get behind, because I mean, Jack is just such an exciting talent.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting one, Hinchwood, isn't he? Because if he was from Ecuador, he would be the one. He'd be the one that everyone was saying this is the next big Brighton superstar, because he's from around here. There's a real feeling that it's just like Jack Hinchwood from Brighton, but he's great. I mean, what, you know, just to have played in all the positions he's played in and never lets you down. Proper footballer. Yeah. Like that's sort of a bit of a throwback, which I quite like about him.
Well, he's had to be a little bit of, well, quite literally a jack of all trades, hasn't he, Al?
Yeah, he's, can I just say he's actually, well, because as we're recording this, we're about to play Germany in the third group game, and he's
Gruder
starting.
Oh, he's starting.
He's starting. Good. Would you believe it? Well, according to Google, which I'm looking at the moment, he's starting at right back, which actually kind of underlines. I mean, and this is where Lee Carsley is, you know, not particularly imaginative, but you know, as you say, he's a jackhammer master of most trades. So,
He did come on in central midfield against Slovenia over there.
Yeah. But that's my point. If he's starting at right back, what does that tell you? I mean, especially if he's playing against Germany. No, he is a star for the future. I am pretty certain, I was thinking about this the other day, of all things that, you know, go through my mind while I'm working at home, is that his grandfather was once on Cracker Jack.
excellent fact.
Cracker Jack!
Yeah. And it was basically along the lines of, I think it might have been the Crystal Palace team that got to the semi-final of the FA Cup in the mid-70s, and they had them on singing some ridiculous football song. And of course, you know, Paul Hinscher would have been part of that. So, yeah, it's there are some random things about him, but let's say 3 goals to finish off the season with, hopefully a some kind of starring role for England. But you know, also I think we have to bear in mind that. You know, he is only still, you know, a babby. He's only just sort of beyond the fetal stage. He is learning his trade, but absolutely everyone that you speak to about him, and if you go back to the show that we did back in October, AD, if you remember, we were talking to Vic Bragg and the whole Mars Bars story. You know full well that the potential for Jack Hinshelwood is off the scale, and probably more so than certainly way ahead of where Lewis Dunk was at 19 or 20.
Well, I mean, obviously, there's the Hinshelwood legacy to think of. So let's just hope his knees hold out.
Yeah, I mean,
That's the issue.
I was sitting really near that injury at with Dean. We used to sit in the north stand down that end, and you could hear it go. He was running back, and you literally heard it go, and you heard him scream. It was awful, horrible injury.
But the weird thing is actually when we had Dick Knight on the show about a month, 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, and obviously he remembers, you know, he employed Adam. And I said to him, you know, did you ever envisage him being, you know, the manager that he is? Albeit he's only managed at sort of tier five and six, but he's done a very good job at Worthing. He's done an amazing job at York City. You know, they didn't quite sort of get over the line, but you know, when you score whatever it is 90 odd points in the National League, that's nothing to be sneezed at. But you know. You know, and when you're talking about Jack Hinshelwood and how much he's taken on board and how much he's learning, that DNA is clearly there. And whether it rubs off on Harry Howell, that's another matter again. But yeah, if not about the quality of the players, then certainly the dynasty is there. And you know, if nothing else, he'll understand what he needs to do and to be a good footballer, to be a great footballer. Or sorry, he needs to know what to do to be a good footballer, but it's down to him if he wants to be a great footballer.
Now, I think Harry's away with the 19s as well, isn't he?
No, I think he's with the 17s.
As in the 17s, I
Yeah.
think.
Oh,
Okay,
young.
well, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We're delighted to be brought to you in association with Wonderful Flowers Unlimited, Al. Where can we get your flowers from this week?
Over there. Yeah, no, head
He's
to
auditioning for a
once.
horror movie there. Did you see
Yeah, it
what?
was,
Yeah, it
it's very good. That's
was
very
quite
good.
sinister.
It
Yeah,
was, yeah.
I'm
What was
scared.
that? I've been thinking that all the way through, though, so it doesn't
Over there. Yeah, or that part in the Bromley Boys where he headbutts the girl. Yeah,
There
I
you
think he certainly needed to buy her flowers then.
go.
He should have gone to, albeit 50 years down the line, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, which is where you'll find Flowers Unlimited, our wonderful sponsors, who have agreed to carry on being our supporters of not just the show but of Radio Reverb generally. Thank you very much indeed to Dave Costa for that. Yes, you can get all your floral requirements, be tributes, thank yous, happy birthdays, happy anniversaries. Sorry you never made it into the Europa Conference League, that kind of stuff.
A wreath, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
And you can get champagne and chocolates, which I think that we'll keep for ourselves should that happen. So head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. If you tell them that we sent you, because if you're an Albion season ticket holder, you get a 20% discount, which is very handy considering just the price of flowers these days.
Indeed, indeed. Talking about the prices of things, we've been shopping, and well, and this is
Brilliant
our
link.
occasional
Love
reminder
it.
to where,
Love that link. Well done, mate.
Very
Yeah,
nice.
wasn't it? Yeah.
But also, this is your occasional reminder to please note that not everything that you read on the internet is true, apart unless you're reading about Warren, obviously, and his dances
The guy from
with famous film
the
directors.
yeah.
No, I mentioned it at the top of the show. Obviously, the transfer rumor mill is in full swing.
It's just a
Most of
game,
it
isn't
is
it? It's just a
absolutely a load of tosh, and yet people keep like copying it and retweeting it. And it's not even chip paper. It's not.
Can I
It's
just
just
say
clickbait.
he said chip paper there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case the reverb lawyers are listening.
At the end of the day, unless it comes out of the club always keep their cards very, very close to their chest. But, just look at, if you're looking for your transfer news, look for reliable sources. Look for us. Look for Brian. I mean, at the Argus, look for Andy Naylor. Anything else is just...
Well, you say look for us. I mean, we're frankly not a source because we wait for the story to be told in its own right. I mean, sometimes there are cases when it's the worst kept secret. We knew that Diego Coppola... what should we do? Should we call him Ford?
Cop a load of this.
Well, I actually thought about that as well, but then it didn't work when I was writing it down.
Would you like to know what was number one the day he was born, Al?
No, because I bet it was rubbish.
It's depressing.
It is linked to a film, actually.
Go on, I don't know.
It was Mad World by Michael Andrews featuring Gary Jules, which is from
is
the...
Really? Wow.
The cover of the Tears for Fears song, which was off the Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I've got to say I prefer okay. I prefer the Tears for Fears version because that particular one sort of just spawned a whole series of whimsical versions of brilliant songs, and that after a while it just drives you around the twist. I mean, you just stick a black cape on your head and maybe watch Fright. I don't know, but anyway, where was I? What was I?
Yeah, but I can also tell you this is that the day. The very day that Diego Coppola was born, James Milner played in a 3-1 defeat for Leeds away at Wolves.
Yeah,
are we definitely going with Coppola rather than Coppola?
I would have gone for Coppola myself.
Yeah, me too. So
but having
rock
said
and roll.
That, if he is Italian or if he's of Italian descent, then naming protocols would say Coppola because Italian then it's the often the emphasis on the second to last syllable, so in theory it should be, do you know, I'll wait to hear from him, but sorry, getting back to the whole sort of transfer, well one thing, and certainly this is something, and I'm not betraying a confidence here, Paul Camlin has said if you see something and then there's a price mentioned in it to do with the Albion either buying or selling, it's rubbish because Tony alone is the one who knows the figure. And even then, sometimes he won't tell hardly anyone else. So if there's a number in there, forget it, it's rubbish. But yeah, I mean, so-and-so's been talking to... There's the cop-outs, isn't there? And as a writer, Warren, I'm sure you'll realise this, so-and-so is linked with so-and-so. and eventually, they just say, but this is what I heard. Is...
Yeah, okay, I think it's one of those things. If you're a sort of in-the-know Twitter person... Then, if you just do that 10 times a day, then you can hark back when João Pedro signs for Newcastle. You can go and say, "Look, I told you."
Yeah,
and that's all it is, isn't it?
It's a Scaligan approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, the player himself, though, in regards to Coppola, obviously he's a right-footed centre back. He's 6'4", so he's obviously going to be nicknamed Shorty because footballers are that imaginative. And
if he was a cricketer, he probably would be nicknamed Fordy because they do have a bit more imagination about them. But yeah, apart from that, it'll just be Coppy or something, wouldn't it? Or Coppo.
More than likely. But whether he comes straight into the side, obviously he's very highly rated. He's made his debut for the full Italian side already. He's currently away with the 21s though in the tournament that Jack's playing in. I mean, again, we're going to talk about the Greek fella in a minute, like hit me Bebis one more time.
Please don't. Can we just Bebis, say, do you feel
Bebis,
that this...
You got me on my knees for you. No.
I am so editing that out. Do you feel then, I mean, is this the Coppola fella or Coppola, Coppola, Steve Coppola, there we go. We'll just call him Diego Coppola.
Yeah. Italian
Steve Coppola. Sorry, Warren, do you know much about this fella? Because, I mean, the way that AD's describing him, it sounds like he's basically oven ready and kind of not one of those for the future.
Yeah, that's been the kind of the interesting thing with what we've been up to is over the last few years. I think it seems to be less now. There was a stage, wasn't there, 4 or 5 years ago where we'd sign someone and you'd just think, we're not going to see him for 2 or 3 years. And we didn't. Whereas now, there's a feeling now, I think, that they're coming a little bit more for the first team now, maybe. If not the first team, the periphery of it. I think that he's surely not to go out on loan. I imagine the £35 million Greek guy's not heading out on loan to the Belgian second division. You know, so I think that maybe things have changed a bit more. But obviously, we're spending more money now. We're not we're spending a
Yeah.
few quid now, which is, you know, when you read those headlines, guys, I'm sure you're the same as me. Occasionally,
Yeah.
you just think this is ridiculous. Like
Yeah.
Brighton signed £35 million 18-year-old. You think, wow, wee, this is absolute madness. But
I think Diego's going to be, he's more box fresh
yeah.
than Costulas is going to be.
Right.
I mean, he's already played the moves that 81 appearances for Hellas Verona, scoring four times in the in Serie A. So that's a good number. So he's obviously getting, obviously the Premier League's very, very different. He's got it's like the rest of our players. It takes some time to settle. His
Now,
first time
you're
leaving
of
the
the opinion,
country.
AD, you're of the opinion that the signing of this fella, more than anyone, is an indication that we are going to go to a back three. Can you expand on that?
Well, that was Fab's preferred setup. He tried it a couple of times last season. Basically, he wants wing backs to be operational. He wants a far. He wants the back three to be like quick and agile. Thus, the high line, because now he wants to go back to that high line that he employed so successfully last season. And if you're doing that with some with like Lewis Dunk, who's never been the fastest, but that is just suicidal playing that system with a player like Lewis in there. It's just not going to work. So we've got Boscagli coming in, we've got Coppola coming in alongside hopefully Van Hek if the Player of the Year curse doesn't strike again. Rumours are
Stop the
obviously
rumors. The rumors
are
count
going
for
around, but
nothing.
you know from what I'm hearing from the player himself. He's keen to stay. I think he will be given the captain's armband next season. He won't be club captain. That'll still be Lewis Dunk. But I think, you know, I'm not calling time on Lewis Dunk's career by any stretch of imagination. I think a fully rested Lewis, a fully refreshed, coming back in, he's going to be playing games next season, but possibly not as many as he would like. And I think we will see a more of a back three next season. I think, go on, Al.
No, it was just one thing, not necessarily about the layout, the formation. It was actually just something you said. You think that Van Hek is going to be team captain? I can't say I'm necessarily sure about that. Obviously, it depends on who's picked, but I think there are a couple of people ahead of him in the queue. And I think certainly, if it's not going to be Lewis Dunk, then it's often Danny Welbeck, and even then, it's Adam Webster. So I think whilst Van Hekker, assuming he sticks around here for however long, has it within him, should he wish to stick around for a long time, to be the same level of legend that Lewis Dunk is, yes, he will be co club captain. And let's face it, he's still only, what, 23, 24 years old.
Well,
But I don't think he'll be team captain. Or so you're right, he won't be club captain, but I don't
I
think he'll be
think
team
he's
captain.
one of those that really drives the standards behind the scenes, though. And
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But I think that the captain really ought to be the more experienced one. Not even necessarily the best one, but more experienced. Let's face it, James Milner isn't exactly Speedy Gonzales, but if he was on the pitch and Lewis Dunk wasn't, there's a good chance he'd be the captain. And do you see what I mean? It's the experience that they're going for, isn't it?
I was absolutely delighted that we gave another year to Milner, actually, Warren.
Yeah, interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously, it's fair to say that it's not on pitch stuff that he's being signed for, I imagine a bit. But if he's fit, then he's, you know, there were games last year when we were 2-0 up on 88 minutes where we really could have done with him coming on and messing the game up, you
Yep.
know.
Well, yeah,
And
I've
you
said it on
know,
this
we didn't
show.
have him, you
I've
know.
said it on the show several times that if Milner was available to come in and be a disruptor and actually,
Yeah.
because basically we got that. That's the thing. We have got such a young squad now, and obviously bringing in Costulas and Coppola, you know, that's driving out the age of the team down further.
Yeah, but you have to remember this, that everyone is a year older and a year more experienced. Let's put it this way. Towards the end of the season, not only were we holding on quite well, in a couple of cases, we then sort of go and take it on further. I'm thinking, for instance, of the Wolves game. You once the final whistle goes, you think, well, that was a really good performance. But whilst the game's going on, you've got to realise how and I thought they were very professional at Wolves. We extended our lead at Spurs. That could have gone sideways easily. And I think
I
that
don't
those
think it'll ever going to
players,
happen at Spurs. Cool. That was.
Those players, my point is that as much as you're saying that younger players are coming in, everyone who has been playing this season is now a season much more experienced.
Yeah, I agree.
And you therefore like to think they've actually learned that in the way that Hertzler has learned a lot of his lessons, you like to think that they are learning theirs.
Yeah.
Hence, last season being not written off as a transition. Hey, we might still get into Europe. But let's face it, I think we're all saying this. And I think Warren probably agrees. I'll bring him in a second. We, as good as it was, Warren, we could have done better, couldn't we?
Yeah, it was such a strange season, wasn't it? Because again, if you offer eighth at the start of the season with a new manager, incredibly young team, it seems like a miracle season.
Yeah.
But
Second best ever
looking,
finish. Yeah.
yeah, but it can't you can't deny it was frustrating at times. It was kind of people getting on Hertz's back, sort of the middle of the way through the season. But and the injuries, you look at the injuries, all the other clubs, with like Spurs and Arsenal whining about injuries, absolutely terrible. And if those lads come back. Ruta and Kadioglu, we didn't see at all, and he's going to be decent, I think. So I think that. But as the season goes, I think it's one of those ones we'll look back on now and think it was pretty successful. Really, it was a it's just a. It was. We had those couple of the Forest game, obviously, and then those couple of games. I don't know. I can't remember. My memory's gone. How close those two nils when we were 2-0 up going to the last couple of
Leicester and
minutes.
Wolves.
How close they were to the Forest game. Where it just seemed like we were a bit weak, and
Yeah. Well, I know
but
it's just decision. It was just decision making. I mean, obviously the Wolves game at home, 2-0 up. We've got 4-1, and Matt Svefa like picked the wrong ball. I mean, it can
can we
happen,
just
but.
say though with that though? I mean, it does disappoint me, and I actually find it insulting towards him is that he gets the blame for that. And you think, hang on, there's 10 other players in the pitch. We have far too many players. We have four players forward when we're trying to close out a game. That's the kind of thing when we're talking about game management. It's not a sloppy pass. It's the fact that we got three more going kamikaze in the 93rd minute when we think, well,
But
actually, what
like I
we
say,
have, we hold. Go on, Warren. Sorry.
that seemed to get better as the season went on. It
Yes.
seemed that Hurst would learn, I think, because again, he's a kid, isn't he? Of
Yeah, but
course,
the
he's
thing is, the
learning.
players learn as well. Once they're on the other side of the pitch, and I say we've had people on this show saying blaming Hertzler, they think, well, actually, on the pitch, there is enough quality, there's enough experience. You pick any given 11, you know that full well between them, there is at least 1,000 games, 1,500 games between them. There is enough experience to know how to close a game out.
Yeah,
And
there should
yet,
be. There
that's what I
should
thought.
be. And but we didn't do it twice. And that's 4 points that we left on the pitch, which would have helped us push towards that European dream
I
that we
fully
actually had.
agree, but for all those times that I think someone has done a ready reckon of the points we lost versus the points we won, and we're back to the argument again, the last minute winner against Man U, the last minute winner against Liverpool, the last minute winner against, was it, who was the
Fulham.
penalty? Was it Bournemouth or Fulham?
Fulham.
Okay,
Fulham.
sorry, it was Fulham.
Fulham.
Yeah, these are points where actually we've gained them. So there's the swings
Yeah.
and roundabouts that people kind of forget. Sorry, Warren, go on.
No, I was just agreeing. I think that's completely true, is that it does all level itself out in the end. And I was going to make a point then, but it's gone. But yeah, no,
Okay.
I agree.
Well,
But
let's move on to the other new signing then. Charalampos Kostoulas, coming from Olympiakos. 22 first team appearances for them, 7 goals.
please don't sing
Rihanna
your song about him.
was at number one with Umbrella the day he was born. James Milner played for Newcastle in a 1-1 draw with the Watford
Hang on.
when.
So when you're talking about these number ones, what years are we talking about here?
So, Bebis was born 30th of May 2007,
Dear
and
Lord.
Coppola was 28th of December 2003.
And then in that Newcastle game, Milner would have been coming to the end of his career.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think this one's going to be as box fresh as the others. I mean, there's a lot of excitement. It's a lot of money to spend on effectively a child.
Charming.
It's well, I'm there's a lot of excitement about him. The Greeks are really, really excited. We've had a lot of the Greek supporters coming onto our socials saying how excited they are about him and how they're going to be looking out for him. And obviously, we saw that when we played Ike, they're certainly no slouches, and so it's quite a tough league, I think.
I actually thought AEK were the best of the three teams we faced in that group. I mean, I know we're looking at something from 2 years ago now, but I actually thought that AEK played the better football out of the three teams we faced in that group.
Yeah, they're the only ones that beat us.
Yeah. I mean, there was a baptism of fire, but yeah. So with all that's going on here, Warren. I mean, I suppose the fact that it's the close season. And you frankly want to drop football from your mind a little bit, just in order that you can refresh, back in August. But do you have any inklings at the moment as to where you think that you'd like us to go, and where, if you were an entitled, if you were as entitled as you've ever been, where would we be?
Well, look, it's such an interesting thing, isn't it? Because I think that obviously, I'm a 50-year-old Brighton fan. I'm eternally pessimistic, so I just think that what always has been since you've been in the Premier League, I've always had this feeling that has this squad and club got losing the first six games in them? If we were to start really badly, have we got our battle in us? But luckily, we've never had to have that battle really after, since the Houghton days. So that's the pessimist in me. The optimist is that you are right. They're all a year older. They've all had a year in the Premier League. There's a few injuries coming back. There's no reason why we can't be out there again. I don't think it's crazy to even think it that we should be up there, sort of battling. I was just thinking back. Well, the point I was going to make earlier was that we sort of it's to do with this as well. Is the Forest was spoken of last year as having the sort of greatest season in football history. They finished like 4 points ahead of us in the end. No, they didn't finish that far ahead of us at all. And
And if we'd have
yeah,
beaten them 1-0 instead of losing 7-0, we'd have actually got
exactly.
that place, you know.
We would, and so that. But the way that the football was viewed at our season and theirs is that ours was a huge disappointment, and theirs was the greatest thing that has ever happened. And yet they were basically the same. So I think that obviously the expectations gone up, and that's kind of interesting how that's happened. But look, if between sixth and tenth is probably where you're looking again and hoping for sixth, I guess.
Do you feel that, your fellow Albion fans do really need to actually manage their expectations a bit more than possibly what's gone before?
Yes. But also football fans, aren't we? It's kind of like,
You're an eternal pessimist,
what's?
so how do you handle your expectations?
Oh, I'm just honestly, it's so weird how little I enjoy football. I look forward to. I talk about it all incessantly. I think about it a lot. I talk during the week with my mates about it. Hate it for an hour and 40 minutes on a Saturday or a Sunday or whatever. Just honestly, genuinely. And the older I've got, and the more pressure. I think when we were in, League One and League Two with Dean and the Goldstone and all that stuff, there didn't seem to be as much pressure. But now the whole world is watching every single Brighton game, and it does feel like, look, it shouldn't affect me at that world, but it really does. And I sort of think that, but the good part about the internet with football, and I quite enjoy it, is the wallowing you can do in a win. So if you go to United and win, the wallowing on Twitter is fantastically good fun for 2 hours after the end of the game, of the meltdowns from opposition fans is something I do enjoy.
Yeah, but you know what you could do?
Go on.
You could go and support Bromley.
I could, yeah, they're doing all right now. That's a good point. And yeah, no, it's funny, is that I'm living Seaford, and we sometimes go down and watch Newhaven play. And
Dockers.
genuinely, as a football experience, I quite enjoy it. We go have a couple of pints, have some chips, stand on the sideline, have a laugh, and there's football with no pressure.
Fantastic.
But the football with pressure, is not my favourite thing.
Well, on that note, Warren, what else have you got? So where can we find Fright?
Fright, you'll find on Amazon Prime, which is currently screening for free, so you can watch it on there for nothing. And yeah, and as is 6 years gone, Bromley Boys is on Netflix. Yeah, and
I would point out that Bromley Boys is actually coming off Netflix
do
soon,
you know
apparently.
what? I spotted that the other day. A bit sad that I kind of looked, I saw that little leaving soon and thought, oh.
Well, I'm sure it will be back. But in the interim, thank you so much to Warren Dudley. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. We'll see you again soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can't.
got the